times.
You can sit
feel free
on the couch.
Dog a duck, talk, talk, dog a duck, talk, talk, duck, talk, talk.
Oh, no, my mojo's fine. Thank you very much.
Dog a duck, talk.
Cool.
This is usually when I'm here and I'm not commentating.
Because let's face it, this is going to be the same conversation that we've had a million times. We're just going to regurgitate it.
Yeah, exactly.
Punch it up a little bit.
It's the talking point.
I got to remember not to talk, though.
Yeah, that was hard for me. I was just sitting there like,
yeah, I know. It's like, want to jump in. Well, like you said, we got a whole effects commentary that we can talk about because the effects are the whole thing. So that's wall to wall. We won't run out of things to talk about there.
Cool. We're rolling. So whenever you want to start.
All right. So
you're moderating.
Yeah, exactly. So
it was you want me to start? Or do you want to start
inside the actor's studio? It's like, well, I'll cue
knock,
you.
Knock, knock. You start.
Yeah. I know. Great knock, knock joke. Yeah, you start it. Knock, knock. Who's there?
See, I even messed that one up. Yeah. I'm terrible.
Knock, knock. That's we're rolling. Take it seriously. Oh, okay. Sorry.
What? Who's there? Wait. Oh, fuck. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So this is the commentary for, we'll just be honest. This is the Trey and Amy commentary for Volume 3. But we've told every Pink Five story that we can think of to ever tell for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, like a bunch of times.
Yeah, so we brought someone else in to ask us questions and make us think of things to talk about. So without any further ado,
I'm your James Lipton.
That's right. So
what noise or sound do you hate?
In 1974, you bought a hat.
Hi, I'm T. nice to meet you.
Exactly. It's like, be sure and ask me the one about, you know, when I get to heaven, what do I want God to say? Because I'm all set for that one. The day
be psyching yourself up for it. That is how we're going to end this.
Okay, good.
Anyway.
What sound do you hate?
And all but I'm T. I worked on the effects for most of these movies at that's some right. point or another. It's, and also,
and that'll be its own commentary. But the setup is that Teague and I also for many years have done this podcast. So we're kind of used to talking on microphones and he's used to hosting podcasts. So we're just going to let him ask us what to say this time.
Oh, cool. So are we at the point where the movie has started yet?
No, but we're going to start now, I believe.
We're going to totally play it, Trey.
We're going to totally play
people
it
at home
now.
Watching your screen, you'll now see a movie start.
That's right.
What odd and convenient timing, because I'm talking about it starting right now. So, hey guys, Amy, when was the last time you watched Return of Pink 5 before today? Like, any of the movies? When was the last time you, like, just had occasion to watch them or seeing them?
Well, I was at the convention down in Long Beach this spring.
Right.
Where we sat and watched them all back to back. I think it was like an hour running time total. And that wasn't even this final version of Volume 3. So I think that it was probably back
but
in
there
April.
Were some, there was that was the debut of the special edition of Strikes Back, though.
Which looks so gorgeous. And, you know, I've said it before. That's always kind of been my favorite one just because... just because I just always had a soft spot for me.
It was a lot easier. I remember it fondly because of that.
It was so much easier, simpler times. Halcyon days.
Did you have a moment while you're watching the whole 45-minute saga where you went, holy crap, we did a lot of work. That's a lot of movie.
I think that. When I sat and watched the whole thing, I was like, what kind of lunatics did this? what crazy people actually did this on purpose? That I actually have had that thought many times.
Right, like for free.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
Just because.
I just have to imagine that'd be an interesting, like, I don't imagine either of you, now that Trey doesn't have to look at it every day anymore, it'll be the sort of thing that you just, like, want to watch. Like, it's more like a thing like, yeah, I know that way too intimately to actually be able to objectively experience it anymore. But also, it's kind of cool to have it, like, in, you know, 10 years and 20 years, you go back and go, damn, we did a lot of movie. That's a lot of movie.
That is really cool. And, you know, my husband recently pointed out, I have a son now. He's 7 months old and he's going to be growing up with new Star Wars movies every year.
Yeah.
And he, you know, my husband said, that's so cool. Sam's going to watch this and, oh my gosh, his mom's a Jedi. So from that point of view, I mean, it will live.
He's going to be totally confused as to what's canon and what's not. Because right. It's like there's the Star Wars movies in the theater, but then the one that my mom is in. And
there's Disney and is somehow involved.
There's comic books.
But he's not going to be into this one because it's all like weird and two-dimensional and it doesn't surround you and have smell-o-vision and it's not true. The Star Wars movie of 2035. It's really the Star Wars movie of old school. Yeah, it's all distasteful and like flat. What the hell? Weird. Movies are like that now. Yeah.
This is always nostalgic, being back in the cockpit, because that's kind of how it all started. Me in a desk chair with a broom handle, you know, and a wing and a prayer, basically.
We shot this the same day we shot a lot of those other inserts, like the Luke Skywalker insert was all that same day. And it was such a relief just to be able to shoot. We're back in the chair.
Sit down,
we're
Amy.
We're so back in
just
the chair.
Sit down.
Just like you get to sit down. I get to sit here and look at you on a monitor, and that's it. And I remember we did that where I was playing Dee Dee in those scenes, and so you had an earwig in, and so I would just feed the lines, but so the mic wouldn't pick me up you know,
right,
as part of your track, I was actually sort of in, I was in your head that day. I was like, I'm just going to whisper the lines at you.
You know, it's funny, Trey, this scene too also really reminds me of actually the first time that we got together and did the original Pink Five, because I had very little understanding, you know, for you guys watching it, I was standing on some black planks and there was this console in front of me, but nothing else existed. So there Trey is explaining, like, no, Amy, you're in a big, like, bigger than a hangar. Like, it's like a big, and it goes down really far. And there's like the ship's behind you. And, you know, he's explaining all these things that I kind of
we didn't
have
even
to
have any real pre-visualization to show you. I didn't have like a model show you or anything.
Nothing. So, you know, all of this is just, it's really just make-believe at its finest.
There's a story that Mark Hamill tells on one of the special features on the EPK for The Empire Strikes Back about how people don't think about this when they're watching the movie, but for him, the experience of filming most of Empire was being alone in a huge soundstage and no one's talking to him. Like, they just forget he's there, like he's a prop or something like that. Yeah. And, you know, and that got kind of lonely for him.
And we've pointed out, as Mark Hamill's experience is similar to Amy's, that Mark Hamill does most of Empire Strikes Back talking to a puppet and a robot. Yeah,
that's
co-stars.
Where I was going with that.
And he has to play a whole movie, you know, whereas Amy's experience was similar. It's like, you know, she's very, very rarely does she have a someone to play off that has a real face. You know, she talks to stormtroopers and puppets and robots and
off screen. And
yeah, me yelling, me do the voices off screen. And
yeah, it's a different experience because there's actually humans around, not in frame, but there's humans around. But yeah, even still, does that get, as an actor, does that get lonely where you're just sort of like interacting with nothing but props, but not just dealing with people? Like, I've seen two people at a bar just talking.
It's fun on one hand because there's a lot of pressure for you just to make it good because you're the only one there kind of bringing life to it. And on the other hand, it also makes it really exciting and delicious when you get to work with another actor who's there with you. A little bit later, there's a scene with Steve Stanton where it's, you know, one of the few times that I'm actually interfacing with
you
a
had
human.
Eye contact.
Making
you
eye contact and talking to someone.
Yeah, and he's so good on top of it that you can't help but just, you know, be better. And so those little moments sort of stand out as being really the fun ones to shoot.
So absence from humans makes acting grow fonder.
Yes. As part of the process of editing this, because, you know, of course I had to take all these millions of little bits and pieces that were shot and all these different times and places, and sometimes Amy's just acting to nothing because we're just getting a shot at the end of the day. And I will say, you know, I'll give you the props because there are times when I will literally just take the step back myself and go, my God, she was literally just in a green box looking at space and, you know, was able to like give this, you know, do this great moment or do this great joke or land this great line and so on. So
thank you.
Has anything about this on that same topic affected the way you think about other actors when you know that they're doing the same sort of thing? Like thinking about even the actors in the prequels who are living in a blue screen world for the whole movie. Like, do you look at them and
I think you can really tell when, like, someone is internally believing and
yeah, you know, like do you discriminate between good and bad green screen performances now because you know exactly what it's like? It's like you're faking it.
Yeah,
you're not doing it
most
right.
People, you know,
that guy is.
They're not feeling.
I just always assume most of the things I see now are green screened in some way. I mean, it's how often do you actually
I just picture, you know,
things.
The world will look cool someday. It doesn't right now, but you know, I'll just pretend it looks cool now and it'll be cool later.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, whether or not you're believable in that scenario, and some actors that are better at it than others, you do great. I just wonder if now that you've actually gone through it too, do you like look at like a performance and go, oh, this one on screen, this person, they're good at this, but the one that they're talking to actually isn't. Yeah. They don't look like they believe it as much. I just wonder, you know, thinking in terms of
no specific
people at the time
stand out in my mind right now. But
I'm just generally
who played Obi-Wan in the prequels?
Ewan
McGregor. I don't think believes a damn thing he's doing in the prequels. I don't think he believes it. He also was drunk. He admitted later he was hammered.
Oh, so. Really?
Oh yeah.
Cool.
But Ewan. I don't think Ewan McGregor.
I mean,
so was I.
So I mean, who can blame?
Yeah, who wasn't drunk?
Exactly. That was a miserable experience, I'm sure. So
no, I find with the green screen, I mean, it's for me, reacting to fake noises is harder than reacting to fake
visuals.
Visuals, yeah, because like he's saying, okay, Dee Dee's on the ship behind you with big guns out here, and they're really loud. And I'm going, okay, well, my hairdryer is really loud, so I don't know. That kind of bugs me. And he's like, no, louder. And then it's not until so much time later that I actually see it finished and I go,
meant
like really, really big BFGs. Okay. Yeah. All right. I guess I'm playing it loud enough, but I could have done more. So it's
like fireworks are right next to you loud.
Yeah. Right. Like I think there's always places that as a performer you can get
interesting.
A little critical.
Yeah. But that's where the editing comes in because, you know, you can make anyone look like a terrible actor if you use all the bad takes. That's the point is, you know, you just when you have it, you have it, and you that's the version you use. I thought when your reaction to the DD guns, I thought was one of my favorites actually. You know, and we're not. And no one needs to know about it except here in this commentary. How many takes there were where you weren't quite there yet, but
right.
You know, you just have to get there the one time and then it's in the movie. So that's the process.
That's one of the things they taught you. Mm. The first thing they taught you in acting school is that somewhere right now, Meryl Streep is out there acting poorly.
Yeah. She's giving a terrible performance.
She's giving it bad. I mean, yeah. You know, so there's a process to it and you go through it and some days are easier than others. And I think, you know, having a director too who can articulate those things, but also give you, you know, visual and audio cues to work from.
And someday
really
I hope
helps.
You'll be able to work with one of those directors because that would be.
Do you know any?
I've seen them. I've heard they're out there, but they're really rare. It's really.
This is a stupid like foreign press film junket question, but what was the funnest part of this one? The catwalk indoor movie.
Oh, I like the hero shot with the you know, once we pick up the well, it comes a little bit. Am I giving spoilers? They've seen this, right?
Yeah, we'll assume they've seen it at this point.
You know, the Vader saber.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Yes.
And I remember shooting it, and somebody said, "Oh, let's get a fan. Let's put, you know, we had like
a fan blowing
my hair,
which I regretted later because of green screen in your hair."
Right. But I think that was a fun moment.
Yeah, I get you.
For me, it's like, well, there's two things about the Vader hand. It plays twice. One is when it lands in our real life screenings. That is the biggest laugh of the entire episode, is the Vader hand landing, which is good because really this whole scene is an excuse to do that joke.
Yeah.
It really is all about that. And this one, the second payoff where the hand is still on the saber is also gets a laugh. And I'm very gratified by that. Yeah. And I'm very gratified because one of the things that I'm proudest of is we don't make a joke out of that. We just let it roll.
Right.
And people find the joke themselves. And I'm really glad that we didn't overplay it.
Right. And we were just talking in our stunt commentary about putting all the fun twirly lightsaber stuff in there, and that was also really fun to do because I practiced it so much that I think I got a little bit good at it. And
I have great takes of you just twirling.
Yeah,
and we kind of rev up until you were really, really fast, and then we would roll.
Yeah, and you start and like I had these incredible, you know, kind of forearm muscles, and you know, it was just you get really comfortable with the physicality of the prop, having a prop to work with. So that once you're like let loose and just go, that was a lot of fun too.
I had a very similar sort of experience, just having a reason that I imagined to spin lightsaber stuff around in my garage when I was growing up, because I was always sad. But that's just
the
thing.
You were the Star Wars kid.
I was the Star Wars kid. Public. It's a very sad thing.
Yeah.
But do you find now that you can't pick up like a broom handle and go, woom, 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 wop, wop, wop?
I think, and I'm probably admitting this out of turn, but I think I still have the shin eyes that Eddie Doty, our fight and stunt coordinator.
Our Eddie,
gave us to, or gave me to practice with, and I think they ended up moving with me. So, Eddie, if you're listening to
this,
and
those are those like bamboo
things, and you
want
to come over and get them,
like kendo stick kind of things, is that what shinais are?
Yeah, they're like bamboo, like a reed type thing, and they're approximately the length of a foil
umbrella.
Or a just lightsaber, if you will, and
yes.
They've got a comfortable grip, and they're just
take those out and.
Yeah, I would just he would have me. The hardest part was learning to like walk and twirl at the same time. So we went out in my driveway and would walk up and down the driveway twirling and
across the way some neighbor peeks out and goes like shakes their head and closes the blinds
psycho.
Again.
She's twirling again.
It's like the Burbs.
Those meth addicts.
What is she doing?
Well, that's another interesting thing that I've and the example that people use most often is smoking. Is when an actor isn't a smoker,
you can always tell.
You can always tell. And it's not the fact that, look, I can hold the smoke in my lungs and not cough. That's not what sells it.
It's the fingers.
It's the fact that smokers are used to having a little flaming stick in their hands and living their lives that way. And so, like, the idea of, I'm going to pick up the paper and then I'm going to
hand
the phone
hand,
and
right
put
hand,
it in my mouth and I'm going to put it over here. That ease of flow is what identifies someone as an actual smoker or not. And that was one of the things I know we did several times with Amy where I see Amy, you know, we sort of had her basic costume, for example, but then I said, Amy, I want you to go home. I literally want you to just put this thing on and wear it. And you'll just naturally start to kind of tuck and adjust and tweak and add a little something. And maybe I'll move this over here because I wanted you to, you know, I wanted it to be your costume and for you to be used to it. So the same idea of, you know, and it's like just walk around, live your life, but live it with a lightsaber in your hand.
And we owe Christine Papalexis so many props for putting this amazing costume together. I mean, it was as custom made to fit as a costume can be. And
it looks damn good.
And it held up. I mean, it held up amazingly well, considering all of the abuse that we put
it still works
through,
to this day. It's because it is mostly leather. I mean, it's most of the pieces. I mean, the only thing that the boots were off the rack and the pants are off the rack, but they've been customized. But you know, all the leather, that leather vest and everything else is a custom piece.
Yeah, I remember the pants I actually bought at their riding pants. Yeah, I bought them at a riding shop out in like Sunland or something. And the boots were made by Dr. Scholl's.
They don't make them anymore, those
they
boots.
They don't, because I've looked for them because they were the most comfortable shoes I have ever worn. And I had to run through with them, you know, in the Redwoods. I had to do stunts. I had to kick and jump and everything. And they were really great.
Trey, what's the reaction you get when you do a big screening when the Death Star blows up right there? Does everyone? I'm assuming everyone goes, oh shit.
Yeah, but I just pointed out, because on that note, this section here, I think it runs for all of 45 seconds, is the only 45 seconds in the entire Pink Five saga that Amy's not on screen. Huh. So, and that's very specific.
I have a question, sorry.
It's very specific that it goes on for this long, because the whole point is to make the audience think we killed her. They actually went through with it.
Oh,
they killed her.
Nice.
Oh my God. Because by this point, the audience should be thinking, and I think that it often they are, like, okay, this is the punchline. This is why no one ever knows about Stacy, because she died and no one knows that she ever existed and did all these things. So until, you know, this very point where people like should be half expecting credits to roll at this point. Like, oh my God, you bastards.
You killed her. Oh my God, you killed Stacy.
And in the very first draft that I had in mind, we did, that this scene wasn't going to be this. It was going to be her as a ghost with Obi-Wan and Yoda.
which I think would have worked as well.
Which would have worked, but it didn't seem fair after all we put Stacy through, that she deserved a better ending than that, other than being a ghost with them going, so are we dead now? Can we fly? I don't understand. Can we float through things? How can I stand on the tree? I don't understand. What's going on?
Does this last forever? Can I just always do this?
We're stuck with her for eternity like this now. Right. So I thought that was...
Oh, you know, I do like that idea.
That was an idea, but we discarded it, and we thought it was much more fun to sort of end on this idea, and I like it because it leaves it open-ended. You know, that Stacy now is like, well, she's a fully fledged Jedi, but she's neither light nor dark. She has her robot companion. She eventually will have a working spaceship again, presumably. And she isn't beholden to anyone. She literally could go and do anything now. And I thought that was the best sort of way to leave the character.
And it was the only way to like kind of finish the arc, because the whole time she's just been this vapid boy crazy, you know, obsessed over Han, kind of.
The other thing is finally, finally she lets go of Han as her motivation for everything she does.
Right. She says, I think I'm over it. And yeah, it's like, wow, she actually learned something.
Self-actualizing.
Exactly. So she's, you know, we've left her at this point where she literally could go and do anything she wants now. And that's where we left the character. So
way to have an arc. Good
I
job.
I would just also like to say, this is the only time in the movie you see my real hair.
Yes, that's right.
That's my real hair. And
we last saw it in Strikes Back.
That's right. And everything else was a wig. Yeah. Just interesting little tidbit there.
That's right.
Hair continuity. IMDb boards are lighting up left and right now.
That's right, exactly. Oh, yeah. And this actually, by the way, was also shot in my backyard, that whole sequence there, where after we shot the other X-Wing sequences, I just had the pieces of X-Wing in my backyard. And I said, well, I guess this just kind of counts as a crashed X-Wing. Let's do that. Remember, you're just at the point you're wearing that little T-shirt at that point, but not to turn this into one of those cliche commentaries where everyone goes, "It was so cold that night," but it was so cold that night when we shot that scene in my backyard. The rest of us are in overcoats, and you're in the little. Okay, Amy, now you wear the T-shirt.
That's funny. I don't remember being cold at all, but I do.
I have
on
pictures
the,
of you like with a blanket on between takes.
That's, I don't remember that at all, but I do remember being very cold the night that we shot the Steve Stanton catwalk thing.
You're in a blanket there too. I have some stuff.
Yeah, that was very cold.
This is on a soundstage. This is not my backyard. Here at the Luke Skywalker.
But this isn't somewhere on another planet?
No, it's not. Now, we were going to tell the story, which is Amy and I had done like 36 little videos together. Three dozen that we let anyone see. This is the first time we ever did anything that was approaching anything romantic in any piece we did with kissing. Right. And it was a weird moment for us. And not only that, but we also shot that same day on that same green screen soundstage, we shot the Han and Leia kissing scene that you see them on the bridge. That we shot.
All of the kissing.
All the kissing happened on one day. And then we had this Christy Marie, who was our Leia double, then was going to an event afterwards, a Star Wars event. And she's the, whenever you, I always describe her this way, Christy Marie is whenever anyone comes back from Comic-Con and goes, oh my God, you guys, I got the picture of the hottest Leia in a slave bikini you've
ever
seen.
Yeah.
It's always a picture of
Christy.
No, I've
met her. She's super,
and
super
hot. And she's stunningly beautiful. And still is and still does. It's Christy Marie. Look her up. And she played Leia like a half a dozen times in our show here. And she was Leia in that scene doing the kissing scene with Vince. And then after she shot that, she hung around, but she put on her slave Leia bikini to hang out with us before she went to her other event while Duncan and Amy were shooting the kissing scene. That was the most, there was just so much rampant hormonal activity going on that we never had on a set before. Like, I'm horny as hell right now and I don't know what to do with it. Everyone else gets to kiss and make out and I just,
oh, you could have made out with Duncan.
Watch it all on TV. What's that?
You could have made out with Duncan.
I offered. That was the night that I said to
him. And then jump on him.
It was like, well, there's the other story we have in the other commentary where one night was a long night and I said, boy, whoever made this coffee, I will blank you right now. And Duncan had made it, but he wouldn't admit.
That's, yeah.
He would not fess up to the fact that
that's
one
of those, you know.
Coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a punchline, but
great
I'm not going to go there.
Great moderating, Teague.
Yeah,
really
I know. No,
awesome.
I had a punchline. I just don't want to go there.
Speechless. How about that?
We're trying to keep it mostly PG anyway.
Yeah,
but
let's try that.
Super awesome movie, you guys. Like,
hey,
high
thanks.
Five and all.
Thanks.
Like, totally.
Like, totally.
Like, yeah,
totally.
Like for real, yo.
It's really nice to see it finally be done so that, you know.
Yeah, it's been a 10-year process.
Mm-hmm.
Longer. When was the first Pink Five?
First Pink Five was made in 2002.
Yeah,
didn't go public till 2003.
10 years, man.
That was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
wow.
On to other things.
Yeah, now we can finally move on to the next thing.
More specifically, now you can finally stop.
Yes. Well, that was my reaction when I got back from we did the screening of what was for the first time the complete thing, although not quite complete, but you know, tweaks. But finally, this is it with all the footage, and at a convention in Houston, Space City Con, we just got back from, and I literally. People have said, what are you going to do with yourself? And I was like, I'll think of something. But literally that first like 48 hours when I got back was kind of like,
what do I do?
I took great pleasure in not doing Pink Five.
But yeah.
Which was so 48 like hours where I'm like, I don't have to work on Pink Five.
Did you get
I'm
back and like, forget or remember that you have forgotten how to do something else? Like, oh,
yeah,
shit. Well,
yeah.
What, before this, what was I?
Yeah, I am.
I got time. I go to
the
store.
I am in the process of rediscovering what I used to have for hobbies and stuff like that. Like, what did I do? I used to do things.
Man.
I'm trying to recall what I used to do.
Yeah, well.
I'll think of something.
That's the grieving process at work. But I think it'll be pretty brief.
Yeah, moving on to acceptance. And
yes. Like empty nest syndrome more
exactly.
than grief.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. It's like, oh, Pink Five's off to college now.
Yeah.
All right. I think I'm going to take up woodworking.
She'll have little movies of her own. It'll be
I'm going to make artisanal birdhouses and sell them on Etsy. Won't I be cute?
I'm going to sell it on Etsy.
I'm pretty sure that's literally something Trey has thought himself.
I see him absolutely. More canning than whittling.
Yeah. I could see
I would
canning.
Go back to canning.
Whittling or scrimshaw. I could
actually,
totally see you pulling off.
With canning and composting. That's
exactly.
Trey's bit.
Well, the first time in about 10 years, I finally was like cooked yesterday, which was fantastic. Like I cooked like actual like things as opposed to throwing it in a microwave and things like that. I actually made a meal. It was really,
I made not ramen.
Yeah.
Look,
it was quite something like, oh yeah, I used to cook food. That was a fun thing I used to do.
Well, you're jumping back into it, man. I want you to be careful because I don't want you to go in too fast and then freak out.
Yeah. So
you have to baby steps yourself back into not having to work on Pink Five every day.
Some kind of life. Yeah. Rebuild it after this.
Got to take care of the inner you, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, but super cool movie, and I guess when we do the effects commentary, I'll have more to participate in.
Oh yeah.
But good job, you guys.
Thanks.
And I don't know.
I guess this is goodbye.
This is the instinct that I have to wrap it up, but I want to let Trey wrap it up because it's his commentary.
No, I have nothing more to say ever.
Oh, cool. This is the last part of giving Pink Five out
exactly.
to the world forever. It's like,
this is
all right. If you're a fan and you're watching this right now and you've made it all the way to the end of this commentary, Trey and I love you very much.
Thanks.
And we wouldn't be where we are without you guys, the fans.
I wouldn't have phrased it that way, though. That's true.
Which way? That we love them? We do. We love
no,
them.
No, that we wouldn't be where they are. I would be much better off without you guys. But still, that's not your fault.
That's cold, Trey.
That's all right.
You just took a beautiful moment and ruined it.
Yeah, well.
Duncan's never going to make out with you now.
Yeah. I'll get him back.
All right. We're out of here.
Goodbye, everybody.
Peace out.
Thanks.
Flowers. Lots of flowers.
Okay.
Fuck you guys. Hey, you.
Trey's
you,
like,
fans,
oh.
Fuck you guys.
Trey's like, oh, last thing, fuck you all. Drop the mic.
Also, if you're still listening to this, you fucking loser.
Seriously.
Fuck you guys.
Fuck you guys. Peace. Out in the hood.
Way to misinterpret my entire message there.
You gotta add in the sound effect of the mic hitting the floor and the feedback.
If they had hated Take 5, I'd still own a house. All right? So, that's my
point. No, that is a good point, though. Yeah. Fuck them.
No, it's
oh no, but
them.
Seriously, yeah.
I didn't say fuck them. I said without you guys, my life would have been better. That's what I said, because that's the truth.
I remember that coffee.